right, hello and welcome into this week's episode of the Scorebook Life Today podcast. I'm Andy Bueller here. It's Thursday, June 27th, just after 2 o'clock, and on the line I've got Dan Dickow and Todd Millis. How you guys doing?
Things are great. We can't complain too much. I've had a nice busy week of a lot more exciting news than I think any of the three of us thought would have been coming after a busy week last week with the NBA draft.
Yeah, all three of us have been at a lot of basketball. I know you guys are at Gonzaga camp and have Hoop Fest. I was out at O'Day scrimmage last night and at the Curtis summer tournament last week and saw a lot of great basketball. So we're pretty heavy right now in the basketball here heading into the 4th of July holiday.
No question. Dan and I this morning were at the team camps at Gonzaga, seeing some teams from around the state and some from other states play. Saw some pretty good players, and had some news break out of it. And that will lead kind of our three big things, in which we kind of go through three news items from the week in Washington high school sports. So to top that off, we'll just go with the latest. Caden Perry, 2021 forward, about 6'9", out of Battleground High School, commits on the spot to Gonzaga this morning. We broke that exclusively on Scorebook Live, and Dan and I talked to Caden this morning. Dan, what was your impression of that from the standpoint of being someone who was once from Southwest Washington and, you know, really was a part of blazing the trail at from recruits going to Gonzaga out of that area?
Yeah, you know, it was pretty exciting for me to see that come about today, because I've been in touch with Coach Manny Mello down at Battleground for quite some time. Just, you know, on everything Scorebook Live, what we're doing here in the state with both the scoring app and now with Scorebook Live Washington and covering high school athletes and programs in a different way. And he's been really supportive. And so in being a supporter of what we're doing, he's continued to keep me kind of in the loop of guys that we need to make sure we're aware of. And at the top of his list has been Caden. You know, he's had nothing but good things to say about Caden Perry since we really started going down this path in covering high school sports. And, you know, one of the reasons a school like his would come to Gonzaga team camp clear across the state would be he's got a player that Gonzaga was recruiting, has interest in, and a coach in Manny's position would want to put the kid in a position where he could, you know, really be in front of the coaching staff and be in that environment for a few days so the coaching staff could really get a full feel for what the kid's like, both as a person, as an athlete, and if they would fit. And so obviously the staff saw something this week that really made them fully excited and ready to offer Caden a scholarship offer. And in talking to Caden after that happened, you know, Andy, you were right there interviewing him. He said, "Hey, I had the feeling that if Gonzaga ever were to recruit me and offer me a scholarship, I would accept on the spot," because he felt that that's a great school. So that was cool to see, but I also saw it from the other perspective, because on Tuesday of this week, I did a number of sit-down interviews with different coaches and players across the state, and Manny Mello was one, as well as Caden Perry. And we didn't dive too much into the recruiting piece and the recruiting aspect, just because that's not where the conversation led. But talking to him off camera, you know, he was very excited about where his recruiting was going. And this wasn't just geared towards Gonzaga. This was just in general. You know, he was excited about how his recruiting was going. He was excited about the summer AAU season where he would get a chance to prove himself in front of more coaches. And lo and behold, 2 days later, Gonzaga offers him and he accepts on the spot. So that was awesome to see. You know, and touch on your Southwest Washington comment. Gonzaga has had great success down in Southwest Washington. Richie Fromm, who also went to Battleground High School, had a great career at Gonzaga. Zach Gord went to Prairie with myself. And then Derek Ravio had a great career at Mountain View before being a really good Zag.
For sure. And now Caden, who has 2 more years left of high school. I mean, this is, you know, like you were saying, a really, really early commit. and one that, you know, took, I think, both of us by surprise, especially just where the trajectory of his recruiting has gone. I mean, he, you know, Caden's a guy that Gonzaga, and not just Gonzaga, UW, Wazoo, Santa Clara, you know, other schools have come to Battleground and watched him play. And kind of he's been on school's radar since his freshman year. He was a first-team All-4A Greater St. Helens League player selection freshman and sophomore year. But he actually didn't join an AAU team until this year when he joined the Rose City Rebels. And I talked a little bit to Manny Mello about that when Caden got offered by Washington. That happened in early May. It was his first Power 5 offer, and, you know, he was really starting to go and play in tournaments, these AAU tournaments where he'd be seen by a lot of coaches. You know, he's going down to Atlanta next month. He's going to start, you know, coaches are going to start seeing him play at big schools. And so for his second Power 5 offer in Gonzaga, for him to say, you know what, I'm just going to commit on the spot, I mean, that really says a lot about what he thinks about the program.
Yeah, and he also had some really nice comments when we talked to him today about, you know, how he feels he's going to fit in, or he could potentially fit in with Gonzaga, because he's an exceptional athlete, and he has seen how Gonzaga's developed skilled big men, but in particular they developed Brandon Clark, who transferred from San Jose State and became a, you know, first-round draft pick. They have very similar athletic capabilities. Now, you know, to say a high school kid from Battleground, 2 years left in high school, is going to the NBA, that's not what we're saying. I mean, there's a long way to go. There's a lot of work. But I guess what I'm saying is there's so many similarities in his athleticism to Brandon Clark's. And Brandon is catching on that, look, they were able to really work and fine-tune Brandon's game. I want that same opportunity to work, and we'll see how things work out for me.
Yeah, and he cited the track record of Gonzaga producing NBA big men. And so, you know, obviously hoping to be the next. He's still got a lot of high school ball to play. But big news for an in-state recruit coming out of the state of Washington. This is a trend. I mean, you know, Gonzaga and UW have both been all over the high school scene, getting kind of the top prospects across the state. This year, particularly, Brock Ravay of Kittitas and Anton Watson of Gonzaga Prep as incoming freshmen at GU, and then you know, Jaden McDaniels and you know, his commitment to UW. So you've got these two college programs that are you know, really starting to, or not starting to, but you know, really kind of getting the top in-state talent, which is the sign of good programs.
Yeah, I love the fact that the best kids in the state, for the most part, now there's going to be times where somewhere else makes sense for them, but for the most part, they are staying home. I love seeing that.
So that's the first news item, and that was the hottest off the press. You can see we talked to Caden, and there's a story up on scorebooklive.com/Washington. Right now, we're going to have a video interview up with him and his coach by the end of the day. So be sure to go there for that. Next, Todd, you were on this story, and this is kind of one of those stories where it appears to be sort of like a rich gets richer situation. So Eastside Catholic adds a guy named Drew Miller onto their football staff. Eastside Catholic being the defending 3A state champs, and again the clear favorite to repeat. They add a guy named Drew Miller. Who is this guy, and why is it so important that they added him to their staff?
Yeah, I mean, Drew Miller was a great quarterback coming out of Lakes High School back in the 90s. At that time, he had set 12 state passing records. His dad, Dave Miller, who's the head coach at Lakes, was the offensive coordinator at the time, and obviously, you know, profiled and emphasized Drew in that offense. Went on to BYU for a couple years, and then was an All-American at Montana. You know, tried his hand at some pro stuff, the Arena League, the Canadian Football League. Not the biggest guy. He had suffered some pretty serious injuries to his back and his neck in college, and got out and got into some coaching. He was at Central Washington a little bit. He was a receivers coach at Idaho State. under John Zamberlin, and then he was helping his dad. He came back and helped his dad out just, you know, casually when he could show up, calling plays and designing some schemes specific to the opponent that they were playing during the week. He's a fascinating, like his father, he's a fascinating passing attack, passing guru type mind. He looks at offense very similarly to his father. And quite frankly, he's gonna accentuate an already potent passing attack at Eastside Catholic. He's gonna keep some of the concepts that Jeremy Thielbar ran with the Crusaders in his time as head coach there, and they ran his offense at the time, and he's gonna add some of his passing concepts and wrinkles off that. And I mean, that could be nothing but good news for, you know, guys like G. Scott, DJ Rogers, even Sam Adams coming out of the backfield is a really good pass catcher. So, you know, good luck, Class 3A defensive coordinators. Your job just got a little more difficult in trying to dethrone these guys next year with Drew Miller calling the shots on offense.
Yeah, certainly. It's a good good scoop, and definitely something that I'm sure, you know, fans of high school football, that will be a good explainer when you see Eastside Catholic putting up crazy numbers with their already really talented staff or their talented lineup. So the third news item, this is a two-part news item. So the WIA is going through a lot of staffing change right now. Mick Hoffman is incoming within the next week as the next executive director, replacing Mike Colbrice, who is retired after a long career at the helm. And there are two fill-ins at the assistant executive director position, and they've made two hires within the last 2 weeks. One of them recently, Todd, you had the story on, a guy named Justin Kesterson, who was the Tyee athletic director and has a really interesting background. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Justin, you know, he's a younger guy, will be one of the younger assistant executive directors under Mick. Has a really interesting background because he kind of fills a role that I don't think that they have a real expert on, and that's the marketing and promotion side of the association. He's, when he was at Seattle U and then ended up going to MSU Billings in as a sports information director, but he was really creative and innovative with some of the ways he marketed games to attract student student attention. Some of the cool things that we even see today, you know, the blackouts, you know, everybody wearing black at football games or basketball games. You know, he was doing that 10, 12 years ago when he was a grad assistant at Seattle U. Some of the promotions with the restaurants and local businesses. I mean, he's a real go-getter, getting out in the community and getting some of the local businesses tied with some of the local colleges. And that was a way to sort of entice some of these students to come out and watch some games. Hey, let's free pizza for the students to come out and watch a soccer game. Or, hey, we're going to have a dance contest. Or, hey, we're going to have a cool light show introducing, some of our players. I mean, he's got that kind of mind and trying to find ways to connect with, you know, the younger generation, and I think he's gonna take some of that creativity and knowledge and experience into the WIAA roles. You could see some of these state tournaments could use an overcoat of a new coat of paint, so to speak. You know, maybe some cool things that'll come from Justin's mind. So it was an interesting hire, and you mentioned Mick hiring both Justin and BJ Kuntz from Wenatchee, two very interesting hires on his staff, and you know a little bit more about her than I do. You want to kind of get into what you learned about her?
Yeah. BJ Kuntz was the dean of students at Wenatchee High School and the athletic director, and she's held a lot of different positions over the course of her career. Grew up a standout volleyball player. And she broke myriad records as a volleyball player in high school. She went on to play at Gonzaga and now has a daughter there. And it just comes from Wenatchee High School, which is noteworthy because now on the WIA staff, she's the lone representative who has roots or ties to Central Washington. And so when you think of a state association that wants to make sure it's representing each part of the state, hiring someone, I'm sure Mick Hoffman was thinking, you know, this not only is it a good hire, not only is it a qualified hire, but it's someone who, you know, comes from a background and represents an area that the staff didn't have representation from.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's important. I think it's important for all areas of the state, all districts of the state, to feel like they have a voice with the executive board. And I think Mick recognized that and hired a couple people that, you know, sort of outside the box. There were some experienced people, you know, serving as district ADs or board of directors or assembly people that I think a lot of people would say, okay, that's the next person in line. And Mick didn't see it that way. It's pretty evident early in Mick's tenure that he has a vision on what he wants to see with his staffing and the people he wants to work with and from what areas they come. And I think these two hires, if they're not eye-openers, they should be. And it'll be interesting to see the immediate impact these two have on the 2019-2020 school year.
And to be clear, like, he hasn't even taken over yet. Like, he starts next week. So he's still the COO of Vancouver Public Schools. These are decisions that are going to shape how the state association looks over the foreseeable future, and you know it's certainly going to look a lot different. So if you want to learn more about these two hires, head to scorebooklive.com/Washington. And I had a great conversation with BJ a couple weeks ago. She actually applied for the same position in '99. When she had very little experience, but this is something that she had like always wanted to do. And so it fascinates me when, you know, similar to Mick, which, you know, in a forthcoming profile of him that I'm writing, he's like, this is a job that, you know, these are positions, these are destination jobs for people. These are jobs that, certain people serving in them are saying like, you know, I've been working my whole life to get here and I've been kind of shaping my whole career to prepare myself for this opportunity. So it should be interesting to see how it all shakes out. But those are our three big news items from the week. So even in the month of June, the news keeps churning around the state of Washington in high school sports.
Washington Federal is a bank based in Seattle that operates 235 branches, and it cares deeply about high school sports not only in the Seattle metro area, but across the entire state of Washington. Head to WashingtonFederal.com to learn more or visit your closest branch.
Who are the top 100 high school football players in the state of Washington? That's a question that at Scorebook Live Washington we tried to answer in a list that is steadily being released on scorebooklive.com/Washington over these summer months. Todd, you and I racked our brains and solicited opinions of people who have seen players play from all around the state. We spent a lot of time really thinking about how we wanted to lay this list out. And now you're seeing, if you go to the website, you'll be able to see who made it. So do you want to just talk a little bit about how we eventually came to cut the list to 100? Because that, you know, it seems like a lot of 100 seems like a lot of kids, but I mean, we were having to make tough decisions. Like, there are a lot of talented players across the state of Washington, across all classifications, not just 4A, you know, all the way down to the B schools.
Yeah. And again, you know, this is not the perfect list. We're not professing to be this is an all-star or all-star recruiting type list. That's not what we were looking to do with this list. We were looking to find
Are you trying to undersell our list
I'm not looking
right
to undersell
off the
our list, but I think, you know, I get a lot of comments. What were you thinking here? What were you thinking there? And not just with this list, but I'm talking about, you know, as a newspaper guy, all area teams, all state teams. If, you know, you put your neck out there when you put lists like this out. And, you know, I'd like to say up front that, you know, the two of us put a lot of time, talked to a lot of people, saw a lot of players. I mean, this isn't something that we sat down over dinner and just said, okay, we got 15 minutes to come up with 100 names. It's, you know, we put in a lot of time. We have a lot of pride in attaching our name and our brand to this particular list. And I like the fact that we looked at players that, A, had pedigree or a track record. So we don't have any ninth graders. There's some really good football players for the class of 2022 who are coming in and playing football this year that easily are probably top 100 talents. But we didn't go down that road with ninth graders. They have to have a little bit of track record. They have to show it on the field. So that was a big factor in us coming up with the list. People that had done it again in their leagues, had done it at an all-state level, and then obviously potential, attention. Recruiting attention had some factor into this. You know, and those two work hand in hand a lot of times. So, you know, as you can imagine, the majority of our players came from 4A and 3A. But what surprised me as we got this list done was how big a representation we had from Class 2A. And I think that speaks volumes to the quality, not only the quality of football and teams that are playing right now in Class 2A, the Hawkinsons. You know, the Lindens, who are always good. Stillicum has had a nice run. So some of those teams, we had 18 or 19 players from 2A, and I didn't anticipate having that many from that specific classification going into this project. So, but like I said, the majority of these players came from 4A and 3A, and I like the list. I like the representation. I like, you know, different parts of the state are represented on this list. I think the ratio of, you know, 4A, 3A, 2A, 1A, and B, I think is a pretty good ratio in a top 100. I hope everybody's reading it. We're releasing it 25 names at a time in alphabetical order, and I think we should have this thing, you know, fully out there sometime before 4th of July.
And there are certain recruiting lists, composite lists, and companies that really invest a lot of resources into just like assessing recruiting and ranking recruiting, and you know, that's some that do a really good job, and that we, you know, definitely took into account for this. But we made the decision not to rank 1 through 100. That wasn't something that I felt like was productive, and that we felt like was productive at this point of the high school season and you know, of the summer, because a lot of times, and you know, you had mentioned this a little bit, but you look at classifications, you know, different kids from different areas comparing different positions. A lot of times you're comparing apples to oranges. And so how based off of our criteria, how could you rank, you know, an offensive lineman from, you know, a 2A school versus, you know, G. Scott? How do you put those guys next to each other? How do you, I thought, especially, you know, from, we would like to have seen a lot of these players play, and, you know, a lot of them we have, but a lot of them we're relying on coaches and people who have seen them play and know them personally and can speak to them and their abilities. And so, you know, that was something that I think that we made a really you know, conscious effort to just say, all right, you know, here are people to look out for, and, you know, we're going to make the determination that they're on this list, but we're not going to go as far as to say, all right, 1 through 100, you know, here's the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, again, especially in late June, I just think that's unfair. I mean, it's just unfair.
Yeah,
I don't want to sit here. I'm a smart enough guy, but I'm not that smart to try and break down who's better between you know, let's just say Sawyer Racanelli, G. Scott, or a Sam Heward, and your quarterback at Skyview. I mean, I'm not a football talent evaluator. I don't work these guys out. I wouldn't know what to look for in a lot of these things. But again, this is not a recruiting list. I think that, you know, the
and to, Todd, like, to be clear, that, you know, the people who are working these players out and are those talent evaluators, like, these are people whose opinions were solicited. Correct. For this.
Correct.
Project.
So, I just think, you know, we're opening, you know, the criticism and the blowback from trying to rank 100 high school football players, it wasn't what we were trying to do. I think just identifying the top 100 players to just kind of look for, you know, keep these names on your radar as we head into the season, and we will update this list. This is not the end all list, and I think, you know, throughout the season and at the end of the season, that list will be updated and changed according to how players perform on the field. So, but it's always fun talking about it. I don't think it's ever too early to talk about, you know, high school football. We're not that far away from preseason camp opening in 7 or 8 weeks. You know, it was a fun project that took a lot more time than I thought it would for us, but I feel confident in what we've done, and I hope our readers appreciate the 100 guys that we came up with.
Definitely. And jumping into it, we're just going to talk about, you know, you and I go through three players we're most excited to watch. Just from a storyline perspective, from a talent perspective, and we can kind of go we can kind of each go back and forth with our picks. But if you had to choose three guys, I mean, who's starting with you, who's the first on that list?
Well, we talked about Drew Miller and being the offensive coordinator at Eastside Catholic this year under Dominic Dosti, somebody that he was familiar with from the University of Montana. You can't help to think what this means for a guy like G. Scott Jr. I mean, some of the years at Sawyer Racanelli and some of the smaller school guys that get 100, 110 catches a game. I'm not saying that G. Scott Jr. is going to get 100 catches this season. I'm sorry, not 100 catches in a game, but 100 catches in a season. I'm not saying that G. Scott's going to get 100 catches this season. But we haven't seen what he will do with 60 or 70. I mean, he could get that this year as the focal point, the number one, the number one pass catcher in that offense. This could set up to be a humongous year for a guy that's rated as the number one wide receiver who's going to head off to Ohio State, and I'm sure he is excited to see more opportunities in a more passer friendly offense. Now they have to settle on what they're going to do at quarterback. Michael Franklin is the returner, and I would assume the incumbent, but they've got a transfer from Hawaii that they're pretty high on as well. So obviously they need to find the trigger finger on the passing attack. But if they do that, and they have the careful eyes of Drew Miller, you know, scanning how to break down defenses, G. Scott could be in for a huge, huge year.
G. Scott is your first choice, and that's one that, you know, the Ohio State commit. Certainly a guy that, you know, anyone who knows anything about Washington's high school football probably knows the name G. Scott. So great choice. My first choice is a guy out of your area up in Tacoma who I have seen play exactly one time, but that one time I was so impressed with him. That is Julian Simon of Lincoln. Julian Simon, he's a wide receiver, defensive back. Physical specimen, really smart player. It looks like an NFL player. When you see him out on the field, it looks like an NFL player playing with a bunch of JV kids. And that, you know, that's a little bit of exaggeration, but he is just physically as impressive of an athlete as it comes. And I covered him last year when I was working with the Columbian. Camus went up and played Lincoln in their season opener and came back. There was a 29-point comeback. Lincoln eventually won 31-29. Julian Simon touched the ball exactly. I don't want to say exactly, but I remember him touching the ball three times. One time was an interception return for touchdown. The next time was he caught a touchdown pass, a 26-yard touchdown pass. And the third time was the game-sealing interception on a two-point conversion to secure the win for Lincoln. You know, this is someone who he is uncommitted. 24/7 Sports has him as a four-star recruit. He's considered by them as like the fourth best recruit in the state of Washington in the class of 2021. So he's still got some time left. I mean, he's going into his junior season. He's someone who, you know, if I'm in the Tacoma area, if I'm going to watch a high school football game on any given Friday night, like, this is a guy who I would go specifically target out and watch and pay money to watch.
Yeah, you mentioned a guy that he was even running the football at the end of the season. I mean, he can do a little bit of everything because he's just so strong. I mean, you talked about his build. He's a man at 16 years old, and he's the last of a few brothers that were really good athletes, including his older brother Jaden Simon, who's headed off to Colorado as an offensive lineman. So, and you can watch him play basketball too. So, yeah, if you get a lot of opportunities to watch him in over the next 2 years, you will not be disappointed with Julian Simon. Now, going to our second choice, and again, some of these guys we haven't even revealed yet, but they're so obvious that I don't feel like we're, you know, revealing too much of a surprise here. But Savelle Smalls is a guy that started out his career at Kennedy Catholic and then spent the last 2 years at Garfield. And, you know, you can catch the ball. He played quarterback a little bit. But he's best known as a guy that gets after the quarterback. Now, he is back at Kennedy Catholic this year. And if anybody who's watched a Kennedy Catholic game, you're not going to stop Kennedy Catholic's offense with Sam Heward and Junior Alexander and Justin Baker and Tanae and just a wonderful group of offensive weapons. What they've had trouble with are stopping people, and they've lost a lot of high-scoring games. Now, you put Savelle Smalls in the middle of that defense, if he can sack the quarterback 15, 16 times on third down and stop a few drives, suddenly Kennedy Catholic's, you know, goes from a 7-3 team to a who-knows type of team. His impact is going to be fun to watch and important for Kennedy Catholic if it really wants to be a Class 4A state contender. He can change that whole the defensive dynamic if he comes and is engaged and wants to have a monster senior season, which I think he's probably motivated to do. I don't think any senior wants the season to end in a disappointing manner. And this is a team that's loaded with talent and has a legitimate chance to be a Class 4A state contender, especially with Savelle Smalls back in the fold.
Todd, did I just hear you right? Did you just spoil that Savelle Smalls is on our top 100 list? Did you really just break that news on this podcast?
Well, yeah, I figured if he was, you know, 80th, if he was on that last cut, I probably wouldn't have called him. But if Savelle Smalls wasn't on our top 10, the first 10 names that we listed, then we're not doing our job very well. So I'm not too disappointed to spoil it for our readers and listeners.
Yeah, no kidding. No, that's an easy choice. That's a great choice. And falls in line with, you know, would pay money to go watch this kid play a high school football game, no doubt. Although I don't have to, because for us, it's our jobs. okay, so my second player a kid out of Vancouver who I really honestly didn't see play much last year. Had some pretty, you know, played in the state championship game, the 4A state title game. Young player, class of, I think, 2021, if I'm not mistaken. But that's Tobias Merriweather, wide receiver from Union. And I'm wrong. It's class of 2022, so he's going to be a sophomore. He played as a freshman last year. This is a wide receiver, a defensive back. He is he's listed as 6'4". I would put him as 6'5", or maybe even taller. I would have to ask Rory Rosenbach or the head coach at Union or even Tobias. But I was out at a three-team scrimmage at McKenzie Stadium where Union, Evergreen, and Hawkinson scrimmaged. And, you know, I was watching him go up against, you know, Hawkinson. This is the defending 4A state champs going up against the defending 2A state champs. And Merriweather just looked physically like the most ready-made Division I player on the field, save for Sawyer Racanelli. You know, he's really tall. He's lightning fast, and he comes from a lineage. His family, two older sisters, twins, Daylin and Jalen. If I'm pronouncing them their first names right, they're twins that were standout track athletes a couple years ago at Union. Racked up a ton of accolades. And are now running at the University of Oklahoma and the University of Maryland, respectfully. And so this guy is an easy one to buy into. Nevada's offered him. Utah's offered him. And those offers are going to keep on coming for a Union team that's looking to reload after losing its best senior class in school history. Look to Tobias Merriweather to really take on a bigger load this upcoming season. Yeah, it's interesting season.
Because, you know, I saw them play in the state championship game as well, but I also saw them play the two games against Puyallup, and it's interesting how important he's sort of become overnight to this team with all those seniors. You talked about Lincoln Victor, and you talked about JoJo, CFLA, and you on and on. You can go on and on with that senior class. Suddenly those guys aren't there anymore. You turn the page, and this is the guy that you want to see. This is the guy you're really relying on to make plays defensively. It'll be interesting to see how much of a leadership role he takes on as a sophomore. You don't see a lot of sophomores in this situation on a state champion on a defending state championship team. So we saw him a lot. I saw him a lot in the 7-on-7 circuit here. Over the past few weeks, he's a very, very impressive athlete. And you mentioned I watched and covered both of his sisters as sprinters and 400 meter runners. It's quite an impressive athletic family down there in Vancouver area. Now, my number three choice is a bit of a surprise, and I am revealing because if we're doing this alphabetically, we haven't gotten to S yet. But my third player, his last name is also starts with the letter S. And it's Kobe Singleton. He's a standout at Tri-City Prep, a fantastic cornerback receiver. He's, you know, not the biggest guy. He's, you know, 6 feet, 180 pounds, but he can do a lot of things. His brother is Deion Singleton, who won a state championship unfortunately for people down in your neck of the woods would remember. He was, you know, he played at played at Chihuahua when they beat Union in the state championship game a few years back. So this is his brother, sure, yeah. And he's transferred to Chihuahua now. And again, you talk about a guy that comes into a new program or comes back into a program. He's going to become an impact guy for them as a first year transfer, and coming from a small school. And frankly, you know, Chihuahua is one of those teams over there in Washington, in the Tri-Cities areas, that are under Steve Graff, always good, always hard-nosed. He's won a state championship at Pasco. He's won a state championship at Chihuahua. You give him some more bodies, you give him some more talent, you give him some more skill possessions on both sides of the ball. I think this makes them instantly a very, very intriguing team heading into 2019 in Class 4A, a team that I would, right now, I would rank in my top 10.
Wow. That says a lot. Great choice. My final choice is going to be a guy who, during his junior season, had most of it robbed from him with an injury to his ribs. Someone who might, I would say, is likely going to come back with a fire. And that's Avery Morrow of Garfield, 6'1", 205-pound running back, a recent commit to Nevada. And, you know, I always wonder this, and I'm always curious to ask high school athletes this. It's like when they get their commitment out of the way before the season, does that just kind of ease the tension of like, okay, you know, the recruiting process is done. Now I can just go focus on playing. And I think of Avery Morrow when I think of that question, because he's, you know, he's happily committed to Nevada now. He can go out for a team in Garfield that, you know, sure, they lost Savelle Smalls, which is going to be tough. They played a lot of the season last year without Smalls and Morrow for injuries. But someone who's going to have, you know, a really big leadership role this year and, you know, in a really, really tough league has a chance to really prove himself and go out on a high note. So Avery Morrow is a guy who's going to get a lot of carries, and I'm looking forward to see some of those.
See, we're not just pass offense friendly reporters. We can see a running back and lineman once in a while. That's a good choice. And I know Andy wrote a story about Avery Morrow and his commitment and talked to Savelle. If you want to take a look at that a couple weeks back. So yeah,
I mean, it's been fun. When you've got the number one player in the country that swears by your abilities, that's also a good sign.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with Savelle Smalls. If you want to be my guest,
I will not. All right. Well, that wraps up our conversation about the top 100 football players in the state of Washington. We're going to be releasing, like we said, those lists 25 players at a time. We've already got two up, so there's two remaining. Head to scorebooklive.com/Washington for those. Be on the lookout. Follow SB Live WA on Twitter, Instagram, across social media platforms, and we'll keep rolling those out. So, Todd, I appreciate you taking the time out of your fine Thursday to chop it up.
We'll do it again next week, bro.
That we will. All right, be good.